Well, that's why I asked. That's how you learn, by asking, you dumbass.
It's Manson Mitchell on the Weekend with Gary Manson, Suzanne Mitchell. A double shot of good conversation with great guests to power up your day. Manson Mitchell, you're on the air.
Thank you, Eric Kramer. Hi, everybody. Happy weekend to you, wherever you may be. I'm Gary Manson.
I'm Suzanne Mitchell.
We are Manson Mitchell in your ears for the hour. We are again of a Saturday, ably assisted by Nathan Miller, the guy. We haven't played this for a while, but Suzanne demanded it. I acceded, and so we're going to hear the drop for our buddy, tall guy Nathan. We like to call him Nathan Detroit.
Hey there, Gary and Suzanne, and happy weekend to you, but I gotta admit, I'm a bit on the weekend side of the weekend,
and
if you get what I'm saying. Well, let's just say I got a little bit of a frightened experience on my way home from work the other day. Something that you hope to never see in your local neighborhood.
Please share that with us and our listeners.
So I was coming home, turning around the back road that goes behind the neighborhood shopping centers, and all of a sudden I hear this bang, 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 bang. I was like, what was that? Was that a car backfiring? And then I see this guy running out of the shopping center parking lot, and I was like, okay, that probably wasn't a car backfiring. And then I slowed down my car just to make sure, you know, that guy who was running out of the parking lot wasn't going to start running my direction. Sure enough, he went the opposite direction I was going down the road, and I kept about a 200-yard distance or feet distance in front of me, and called 911, and eventually he ran off the road and back into the shopping center. I heard another bang, 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 bang. And when he disappeared and told the police everything I saw. And yeah, not really what you want to see on your way home from work, especially when it's past midnight.
Wow.
Thank goodness that you are okay.
Yes, and I hope everyone too. I didn't hear any screams or anything like that. Of course, you know, the guy was running, so I don't think he was hindered in any way, but there was a lot to process that evening.
What was on the local news about it?
I didn't see anything yet. You know, part of me wonders if the police even showed up.
Wow.
That's stunning.
Yeah, that is.
Well, Nathan, again, we're so glad that you and all concerned apparently are okay. I don't know about the possible criminal activity or what is involved, but please update us the next time we talk.
Yeah,
because
I looked up some,
know all about it.
Tried to find some stories. Of course, when I looked it up, it was still fresh, so I don't even know if news stories have developed. But yeah, that'll be something I'll keep an eye on and see if anything pops up in our local neighborhood news.
Please do.
Wow. Quite a harrowing experience.
Wow.
Especially when you hear that popping noise and you figure out it's gunfire and not just a car backup.
You know what impresses me, Nathan, is that you had the presence of mind to say, okay, no, I'm going to stay back there. You know, you're driving at this point, right?
Mm-hmm. I was driving. I was just making a left-hand turn off the main road onto the back road.
You had to make split-second decisions.
Mm-hmm.
To stay away from
I was
this.
Almost ready to turn away my car, but I was like, okay, let's just see where this guy's going first. And that way, if, you know, I do get on the line with 911, I can tell them, hey, he's going this way and give him as much information as possible.
I am.
I would like to think that I could be that much in the present moment for the sake of all concerned to make the right decisions. And it certainly sounds as though you did, Nathan. Good for you.
It's amazing how fast a human brain works when you're in, I want to say, a survival mode like that.
Yeah. Well, very good. Yours worked. Excellent. Excellent, Nathan.
Wow. Yes.
So why are we using Nathan Detroit today?
Well, because we're going to talk about lots of cities.
Ah, gotcha.
Cities in the United States. And cities along a very particular route.
Yes, indeed.
We're going to have some fun with today's show.
We are going to
and
be speaking.
And not to mention, it's a motor city, too. So getting in your car and driving around.
There you go.
Yes. The Route 66, the focus of our show today.
Doesn't happen to go through Detroit, but that's okay.
It doesn't begin in Detroit. It begins in Chicago, Suzanne Mitchell's hometown.
Yep.
And we will begin the stories. Well, I'm getting ahead of myself.
So
let me give Joey Medea, our good friend, his mad props. And then we're going to get into Supernatural 66. This is going to be a really big shoe. Joey Medea is an actor, screenwriter, audio dramatist, playwright, novelist, director, and podcast host. In addition, he is a sought-after designer of escape rooms and a doggedly diligent researcher into historical events, people, and places. I searched high and low and could not find what would round out his resume, which, of course, would be being a notary public. But, you know, that's okay. Everybody has a gap in their resume somewhere. I understand.
We will give out all that good information on how to contact Joey Medea at the bottom of the hour break. But for today, we are really excited to talk about Route 66 and all the supernatural things along the way.
And it turns out there's plenty of it.
From 8 states, Illinois to California.
You talk UFOs, you talk about haunted locations. This is all part of Route 66 lore. Mysterious lights. Oh, the stuff we have. I'm glad we have an hour to do it. And Joey Medea, welcome once again, my friend. We love it when you join us on Manson Mitchell.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here. I have to apologize to the audience. This isn't my normal voice, but my beautiful bride brought me a little present a couple days ago for our 17th anniversary of our first date, or 27th. So I apologize, but we'll get through it.
She brought you a cold for your anniversary. Did you thank her with roses, or you reciprocated in some way, huh?
Yeah, I was so determined to take care of her that, So anyway.
Well, the thing to do is to make a bouquet of roses out of Kleenex.
There you go.
Certainly have those. Yeah, 2 dozen probably we could make.
Well, we...
Our best to Tanya and to yourself, sir. We wish you speedy recoveries.
We'll try not to tax you too much, but you are the star of the show. And Gary and I, in talking about how we wanted to do today's show, I said to him, we got to start at the beginning, just like on The Sound of Music. You know, you start at the beginning, do, re, mi. And for us, Gary and I stood under the sign that says beginning of Route 66, which is in downtown Chicago on a busy street. And I believe we may even have a photograph of it, although heaven only knows where that photograph is.
I've got it.
But we stood under the sign, and he and I have never traveled the length of Route 66, although we've talked about it. But it's a very long road. We were at the beginning of it. And so I said to Gary, let's just cover the 8 states. We'll get to a few things, you know, going east to west. And we're going to cover everything from haunted locations to ghost sightings to UFOs. If you wanted to make the route yourself, if you said, you know what? That's always been on my bucket list. I would like to travel Route 66 from Chicago all the way to the end of Route 66 and see what's along the way. Well, here's one way that you could do that I think would be pretty fascinating.
And it is the recommended way to travel the length of Route 66, because it started in Chicago.
Yes.
Go from east to west, because that's where most of the build. Now, today, what survives, that's a separate question. But if you're going to begin at the beginning, you begin in Chicago, and you will find as you are heading from the Midwest all the way to Los Angeles, you're going to see a lot, as it were, on the right-hand side. But of course, everyone is free to do Route 66 or any leg thereof any way they want. It remains the mother road. However, it is decommissioned. And that brings up a question of the condition of the road in various places. And so we'll be talking to Joey about that as well. Joey, I have to say, you know, I think I heard the smile in my voice as I mentioned podcast host. Joey Medea is an actor, screenwriter, audio dramatist, playwright, novelist, director, and podcast host. it's last, and in a way, it's the least concerning you, but it speaks to your versatility. Suzanne and I agree when we were booking you there, I think we put it in the promo during the week, that we have never had a more versatile guest than yourself in the history of Manson Mitchell. How you find an additional 24 hours at each day to do all this is beyond me, but you have an extraordinary series of careers going on seemingly contemporaneously.
I appreciate that, and I hear it a lot, but really I have one career, and I am a storyteller. And all of those things are storytelling. So I think this is my 14th time on the show. For the audience who may not know me, why Supernatural 66? Well, for the past 15 years, because of a very personal experience Tanya and I have been studying the paranormal, which began by studying me. And we've talked about that on the show. But I've applied all my skills as a storyteller to that. And I had a guest on my show the other night who's an experiencer. And he said, your understanding of story, the way you could relate to my story for your audience was important. So that tells me I'm on the right track.
As we leave the environs of Chicago, I smiled when I saw one of the places you had listed in Illinois was the Joliet Prison, because I have family in Joliet who I've never met. And as far as I know, they're not actually in the prison. They are just cousins once or twice removed on my dad's side. And they're in the Joliet area where I have never been. But there is it a haunted prison in Joliet? What is it in Joliet on Route 66 that people might want to see?
Oh, yeah. It's the old Joliet Prison, made famous in the opening scene in the Blues Brothers, because that's where I believe it's Jake gets released from there. And prisons are often haunted, right? These are places with a lot of trauma, a lot of anger, unfulfilled dreams, confined spaces, a lot of tension between guards and population and within the population. So it's not surprising. You know, most of these places I'm talking about today, with some exceptions, have sort of your garden variety haunting effects, not to make light, but people see apparitions. They see strange lights. They hear strange voices. I have never been to the Joliet Prison, but I have been to Moundsville in West Virginia. And when I got within 6 feet of what they call Old Sparky, the cap that they use to electrocute prisoners, I got a punch in the solar plexus that knocked me back a foot. So these places are very, very haunted, and right almost at the start of Route 66, if you're going to do it east to west, you're going to get off to a great start by going to Joliet Prison.
Now, if you go there, are you standing on the outside looking at the razor wire, or is it actually a place you can go visit? Is it open to the public?
That's a really good question. I believe it is, and I believe that there are tours there. It is, I do believe, an attraction, just like Moundsville, just like other prisons, former institutions for the mentally ill often have these tours, because it's a way to keep the building going and to raise funds, raise awareness, keep the history alive.
Excellent.
What occurs to me as I hear you talk, Joey, is that places can be long abandoned, and yet, even though they are for all practical purposes dead or inutile, they remain energetically alive. I find that extraordinary. That's what fascinates me about these haunted locations. They may have closed 50 or 100 years ago, but the energy of the places persists.
Absolutely. That's wonderful. I have here with me the Mothman Prophecies, John Keel. And he said this, I am no longer particularly interested in the manifestations of the phenomenon. I am pursuing the source of the phenomenon itself. And that's where I've been the past couple of years. That involves a question like yours. Why does this happen? Stone holds memory. Metal holds memory. Land holds memory. And the air holds memory. So I have been to many haunted places where there's an isolated incident. This is what we call a residual haunting. You cannot communicate with it. It is stuck in a loop. It is almost like a burn from an iron on a piece of fabric. The heat of the event was so traumatic that it actually burns into the ether, into the air. Reflected, I think, you know, very haunted places geographically often have quartz deposits where two bodies of water come together, such as Point Pleasant, West Virginia, home of the Mothman. You have energy there. These are sacred areas where indigenous tribes held their rituals. There's a reason for that. Ley lines come into play, and I have not done a study of the ley lines of Route 66, but I'm going to. So that's why these places hold memory. It's in all of the elements hold this energy and then broadcast it, reflect it back. And then, like Tanya and I found out when we did our 2 years, our 150 hours in the Webb Library in North Carolina, when you bring people in, we brought in 525 people, their interest, their curiosity, the instrumentation that they use, all amplifies and reflects back those memories and those energies.
Let us move the car along on Route 66 out of Illinois and into Missouri. And when you are in Missouri or Missouri, what is it that you would like to see, or what have you seen, either way, would like to see or have seen on Route 66 in Missouri?
Well, if you're ever in Joplin, go, if it's a clear night, you can often see what is called the Hornet Lights or the Ghost Lights. And that's specifically, so it's the Missouri-Oklahoma border, but they are called the Ghost Lights of Joplin, Missouri. And this is East Route 50. People report seeing these balls of light that dance on the horizon, that move intelligently. You know, there's some controversy, which I don't understand, about ball lightning. I've seen it. Have you guys ever been near ball lightning?
I have not.
No, I haven't.
Okay, so some people say, oh, it doesn't exist, including scientists. But I was sitting in an old coal camp in Philippi, West Virginia, and a couple hundred yards from us, from this abandoned coal deposit, comes this ball of light. You know, that kind of moves across the camp and then kind of sparks out and becomes sort of a traditional lightning. Now, people will say, because there's always the debunkers, that it's atmospheric gases or it's headlights from the highway. Headlights are easier to debunk. We always have to do that as researchers. Plenty of researchers have said, no, you can't see the angle of the headlights, or they certainly don't look isolated and move in intelligent ways. So that's definitely worth doing. Joplin. Let's do this one and then end on a lighter note in Missouri. And I want to preface this by saying, although this is open to the public and people take families there, as you'll hear, a lot of deaths occurred. And for a family, it was a massive tragedy. So we have to be respectful. And I would invite everyone to be respectful. Tanya and I always ask people at the Webb Library, there was one death there, a very tormented spirit. So what I'm talking about is the Lemp Mansion, and this is Benton Park in St. Louis. Again, so very specific. The Lemps had a very successful brewery in the early 1800s. Well, actually, in the later 1800s, their family migrated from Germany in 1838, and they started what became one of the biggest breweries in St. Louis. So that's really saying something. It was the Falstaff brand of beer, for those who are old enough maybe to be acquainted or to remember that. And everything was going very well for the Lemps. They built this beautiful house, the Lemp Mansion in Benton Park, which was very well to do. And they built the house in 1890. And for the first decade, everything was wonderful. But then their son Frederick dies from heart failure at 28 years old. So this is a natural occurrence, but it starts a weird domino effect. 3 years later, the father, the patriarch of the family, William Sr., shoots and kills himself in his bedroom. And in the intervening years, three other children from that family died by suicide. Two do so in the house, William Jr. and Charles. And then Elsa Lemp, who married someone else, she is thought to have committed suicide in her nearby home, but there are some rumors that perhaps she was murdered by her husband. The last surviving son of the family, Edwin Lemp, he died in 1970. And right before he died, he instructed the caretaker to burn the art collection and all of the family heirlooms. So as an investigator, this opens up a whole host of questions about the mechanisms behind these things.
Absolutely.
As I think about this tragedy, this compound tragedy, I wonder how much of it had to do with psychology, perhaps heredity, there, so that if we look at it from the paranormal angle, that is one viewpoint. But I'm wondering about the family dynamics.
The DNA.
The DNA, because yeah. this is a remarkable example there to study from various angles, but we've all heard about or read about families where suicide is likely or and statistically improbable, but it happens.
It does, and I think that there's a lot of things. And as responsible paranormal investigators, we always go to the mundane and the scientific first. So I agree with you. Once that first suicide happens, it could trigger more. We don't know the history of the Lemp family going all the way back to Germany. At least I am not aware of those records. If I was going to do a tour of this facility, I would absolutely want to know that. I would also want to know, were there occurrences like this within the neighborhood? Because sometimes these things spread out. And I don't want to go too far afield because we have a lot of miles to go.
We have a lot of miles on our route here. Yeah.
Yeah, we still do. But burning the heirlooms and the art collection is very, very curious, as there may be a paranormal manifestation there somewhere. But we'll leave it at that.
We'll leave it at that. Okay. There is more in Missouri that is of a haunted nature, but as you said, we've got six more states to cover, so let's get one, at least one in before the break. Is there anything that strikes you pretty solidly as you move from Missouri into Kansas on Route 66?
There's a couple of things, because they're a little different. There's St. Jacob's Well in Caney, Kansas, which is haunted by a ghost of a little girl who drowned in the well. So this is something we'll see. I would guess that that is a residual haunting, that moment of falling and fear and death made an imprint. There's also, because I want to do three in Kansas, even if we have to move real fast, because Kansas gets short shrift because it's only 32 miles on the route. And I don't want to do that.
Okay.
There's the Baxter Springs Heritage Center and Museum, which is a former train depot. Train depots are often haunted. I had a weird time slip with the train station across from my house, went backwards about 100 years in time in North Carolina. Weird thing about Baxter Springs Heritage Center, there's a Nazi flag from the Eagle's Nest in Austria there. At the Webb Library, Tanya and I had a very strange series of encounters with a Nazi submarine captain who had died off the coast of North Carolina. So that just kind of struck me. Those are very powerful ideological, political energies. And I'm very sensitive to these things. If I go to a museum or a pawn shop where they have a collection of Nazi items, I'm sick in my solar plexus, you know, physically. They carry a lot of energy and ideology and all. Then there's the Rainbow Bridge in Baxter Springs, haunted by the ghosts of those who died during its construction. So we hit three different types of hauntings in Kansas that we haven't talked about.
Excellent. Excellent. Let's go ahead and take our break. Let's take it quickly and come back. And we've got five more states to cover.
And when we get to Kingman, Arizona.
Ooh, baby.
Look to the skies. We are talking with Joey Medea. We are Manson Mitchell. We're so glad you tuned in this Saturday. Glad to have you with us. We will be right back.
Hi, everybody. This is Anson Williams from Happy Days, and I'm so excited to tell you about American Road. It is the best car travel magazine in the world. They have the most fantastic adventures detailed in each magazine with all your itinerary. We could just jump in the car with your family and have the most fabulous adventures you've ever had in your life. Please get a copy of American Road and start your own adventure.
Staying connected with Gary Mance and Suzanne Mitchell is easy. Just go to manceandmitchell.com for the latest info on topics and guests. Friend Gary Mance and Suzanne Mitchell on their Facebook pages and like the Mance and Mitchell show page at facebook.com/manceandmitchell. If you're on Twitter, share a follow with Gary and Suzanne at Mance Mitchell. Join Gary and Suzanne Friday and Saturday mornings at 10 a.m. for an unusual show that covers everything from personal growth to the paranormal.
Here's an amazing act. Here's a tremendous act. Here's a startling act. The amazing, the thrilling, the greatest, spectacular, incredible, exciting, wonderful, world fame, most unusual novelty act.
The home of the A-Team of Alternative Talk is manceandmitchell.com. Heard right here on Alternative Talk 1150 AM or streaming live from your computer anywhere.
Terry Loving wants to help you with your online marketing challenges right now. She has several courses she is giving away to help you get your business working for you online. Yes, giving away. WordPress websites are her specialty, yet her technical skills go way beyond that. Check out her blog at terryloving.com or email her directly at terry@terryloving.com. That's terry@terryloving.com.
I'm Gary Mance.
I'm Suzanne Mitchell.
We're a couple of baby boomers who bring you a talk radio mix of metaphysics and music, politics, and pop culture.
And you never know which celebrity will join us for an interesting conversation.
Mance and Mitchell is Boomer HQ, Friday and Saturday mornings at 10 on 1150 AM KKNW.
Your home for alternative talk in Seattle and Western Washington.
Ready to shake things up? Try Alternative Talk 1150.
Welcome back to Manson Mitchell. We are talking with Joey Medea about supernatural occurrences on Route 66, a decommissioned highway which goes from Chicago to the pier in Santa Monica, California. And all the things along the way, if you wanted to take that Route 66, these are just some of the haunted things that you can see. If people would like to find out about your podcast or your website or how to connect with you, Joey, what are some of the ways they can do that?
Oh, yeah. This is always the really easy part. Just search Joey Medea. I'm on all of the platforms. The podcast just had its 206th episode. It's called Into the Outer Realms. We discuss all of this and spiritual matters and what you would call fringe theories, I guess. I prefer that term in an increasingly complex world. But yeah, Joey Medea. You'll be able to find me just about everywhere. Love to connect with you.
Thank you, Joey. we want to move along because we've got five more states. And there's a couple of real quick things along the way, moving from Kansas into Oklahoma. What do we have in Oklahoma?
Well, something different. I tried to give you sort of a plethora of types of hauntings or locations. We have the Brady Theater in Tulsa. Beautiful, beautiful establishment. Theaters, I grew up in the theater. I've experienced many hauntings there. Actors get very emotional, both personally and professionally. The power of going into a character and being in the spotlight and perhaps singing a song or dying a death that you try to make realistic will cause these residual hauntings. Here's another type, and you can find this in Kansas and Missouri as well. Mining towns often have hauntings. Mining, now, not on Route 66 that I found, but in other places, cryptids are often associated because you're going deep, deep, deep into the ground. So that's the Pitcher Mining District in, it's spelled Miami, M-I-A-M-I, but it was named for a man's wife, so it's pronounced Miami. Just so you know when you go locally. Miami, Oklahoma.
Excellent. I had an uncle who was born and raised in Florida, who is now deceased, and he used to call Miami in Florida, Miami, Florida. So I don't know. There must be something to that.
Yeah.
Anyhow, so that's Kansas, Oklahoma, from Oklahoma into Texas.
Right. Now, Texas is a big town, and I should say to folks who are interested in this, there are books and books and books written on hauntings along. So these are little highlights. But the ghost town of Glen Rio, which became a ghost town when the interstate bypassed it, is literally a ghost town. And I wanted to bring that up. That has the distinction of being the halfway point of the route. And it's right on the Texas-New Mexico border. There's another reason to mention it. Then in Amarillo, which Amarillo, along with Albuquerque, Tucumcari, are some of my favorite towns on Route 66. There's something called the Natatorium, or the Nat, which opened in 1922. And this is a music venue, little different than the theater. Buddy Holly played there. Little Richard played there. And people report seeing people dance around the dance floor, which I just love. That's such a beautiful, positive energy imprint.
They do that at Disney, too, in the haunted house. They have dancing on the floor.
It's a beautiful image and a very cool trope.
Yeah.
But there's also a spirit that, based on her dress, people think she's from the 1930s. And she walks around with a wine stain on her dress. That's a little more unsettling. Might have just been an accident. I mean, somebody bumped into her. We don't know, but it's there. So that's Texas.
All right. We're moving along here at a quick pace, which we need to do, because we still have 3 states left.
Well, next door to Texas, you've got New Mexico. That's a state I have been to a couple of times. And I want to go again. I want to go to Carlsbad.
And I've never been. I'd like to see New Mexico.
They earn their designation, their nickname, as the land of enchantment. It is an enchanting place, and I can't wait until you and I can have that experience together, Suzanne.
Yeah.
Right, I would love to share a break bread and meet up with the Medeas there. That would be a good time. We'll see you at the caverns.
Absolutely. In 1997... was driving just after dawn in the Painted Desert, New Mexico, Route 66, on the way to a brand new life. And in front of this beautiful mountain comes the Santa Fe Railroad locomotive, like something out of a childhood train kit. Great moment of my life. We didn't really have cell phones then. I didn't have a camera with me. So that's just my memory. But it was so surreal and wonderful. New Mexico, we're going to talk about when we move to the UFO portion of this show. But I do want to mention the La Fonda Hotel, which was a Harvey house. And folks who want to do any kind of deep dive, if you're into architecture, if you're into hotel history, you have to check out the Fred Harvey houses. They sprung up all over the Southwest because a train would come to town. It would stop enough to get some water and do what it needs to do to go on its schedule. And people would have to be fed. And oftentimes they got these horrible meals. So these wonderful hotels, many of the Fred Harvey hotels were designed by a female, Margaret, and her last name escapes me, and I apologize for that, but a very famous architect. And there's a wonderful 1946 musical with Judy Garland called The Harvey Girls.
I've seen it. Yeah.
Yeah. To be a Harvey girl was a very big deal. They were vetted. It was a point of honor. They wore a certain uniform and they behaved a certain way. And during World War II, in the Southwest, they fed up to 3,000 soldiers a day, either going to training in the army camps and army airfields that sprang up, or going to the Pacific. So I think a nice meal served by a Harvey girl before you go to fight for your country in the Pacific Theater is a pretty nice thing.
I do too. I do too.
Have you ever eaten at a Fred Harvey's?
I never have, no. It's on the bucket list. Yeah.
Good. Two different locations, one in Chicago and one in Barstow, California, as I recall, on the way to Las Vegas.
Nice.
Talk about crowded. I never waited so long for a cup of coffee in my life as in California there on the way to Las Vegas there in Barstow. Wow, is that place crowded. It's one of those places where you would naturally stop. You're hungry and maybe you're not going to go for fast food. You want to have a cafe restaurant type of experience. You would stop there while you're on the road. It's a natural. So that was the inspiration of somebody who thought, okay, why don't we do it this way? And I don't know how it turned out financially, but they must have done very, very well. They were feeding 3,000 soldiers a day.
Oh, yeah. They sprung up everywhere and they were beautiful. They incorporated cultural events. Many of them had in-house indigenous artists, many female. And at the time, the early 1900s, late 1800s, you just didn't hear of that. So they were very progressive in a wonderful way. And I think Fred Harvey would be rolling over in his grave or haunting a Harvey house where you had to wait that long for a cup of coffee, because that was not the mission. And I just want a side note before we move into Arizona, where I lived for many, many years. The idea of an owner of a hotel or a restaurant haunting the premises is so ubiquitous. It's amazing that the people become, and I think sometimes they're more than residual hauntings, but you can smell cigar smoke at the Blennerhassett in Parkersburg, West Virginia. I've been there. I've experienced that. So that's sort of a blanket trope of hauntings, that these owners really get attached to the things they built.
Yes, I can certainly, and I've heard such things. I also want to take a bit of a dive into the life of Fred Harvey to find out who he was. Was this his brainchild? Was it named in his honor? I would like to know more about him. Now you're going to set me off on a quest, Joey.
There's a wonderful book about the Harvey houses. You know that series where there's sort of sepia covers and almost every town you go to, they have a... Yeah, there's a great Harvey House book I highly recommend, and you'll get your deep dive in one book.
Thank you. Excellent. If anybody knew where to look, it's Joey Medea.
Oh, I own it.
I didn't know you lived in Arizona. Were you close to Route 66 when you lived there?
I was not, but I drove 66. We were there for 5 years. So okay. I don't know. That doesn't count as many, many years. That's where I met Tanya. But I took 66 coming in, and then we took the kids to go stand on the corner in Winslow, Arizona when we moved to New Jersey. But I was so busy running a theater out there and building my new life as a husband and father that I didn't get to ride Route 66 while I was there.
Well, let's go ahead and talk about Supernatural 66 in Arizona, because now we're going to take a little bit of a turn. It's not ghosts anymore.
No, so it gets a little bit spicy here. There's the Oatman Hotel, where there's a prostitute named Odie who still frequents her room 15. And it would be interesting to survey people who have experienced the room. I bet you some people will go in if they don't know anything. It would be really interesting to see what they get. Knowing she's a prostitute, I think some people will bring their energy and they'll go, she's miserable and desperate and traumatized, and that's why she's in this room. Other people who had, I think, a more open mind or a different perspective on the fact that she was working and she was housed and so forth, might say that she's attached to the room because that was her home. So, folks, that brings in our relationship, right? It gets into quantum physics. You don't observe something without affecting what you're observing. And I don't think we talk about that enough as researchers and investigators, that our own energy and our own perspectives interact with those energies and produce a result. So I just wanted to say that. Celebrity time. Clark Gable and Carol Lombard stayed at the Oatman Hotel, and they are rumored to be heard whispering and laughing in the room that they stayed in. So that's kind of cool.
It is, and it also makes me think that perhaps this is a residual haunting, because I would think that those two stars would have other things going on in their ongoing lives on the other side, but special moments have an energy, a power of their own, and maybe they replay. And if you're there to witness it, who's to say that when you are there to encounter it, you don't trigger something? It's interactive, perhaps.
That is a great point. And yeah, let's broaden that out just a little here and be thorough. Probably is, well, almost certainly is residual. The whispering and the laughing. We're going to mention something in California where that's very, very prevalent. But to concentrate on that, yes. Also, too, we have to allow for the fact that it may be a trickster spirit, or it may be a very mundane spirit that knew that they stayed in that room and likes the attention, because Joe Schmo, the haunted spirit, people maybe aren't interested in. But Clark Gable and Carol Lombard. So as investigators, we have to look at all of these things. But yeah, most likely residual.
Yeah, that is a good point.
Yeah.
That's one character that Stan Lee never got around to creating. Joe Schmo, the haunted spirit.
Yeah, well, no offense to Joe. I myself am a Joe Schmo. So there you go.
And God bless Stan Lee, wherever he is. Kingman, Arizona, my friend. Big doings there back in, was it 1953?
It was 1953, and a little bit of context. Well, let's, you know, yes. Operation Upshot Knothole. You sent me this soft lob, and together we're going to knock it out of the park. Right. There was an event in Kingman, Arizona in 1953, and it happened in May. From March 17th to June 4th, very close by at the Nevada National Security Site, also known as the Nevada Test Site, there were 11 nuclear test shots conducted. And one thing we've learned as ufologists, for me now to put on a different hat, is that there are correlations between atomic activity and UFO sightings, right? The Trinity test opened everything up. And if anybody who thinks Roswell was the only event in 1947, check it out, because there were almost a dozen events that year. So when you send up that signal into the universe, I like to say everybody in the universe goes, the monkey's got guns. We got to watch this. We got to keep an eye. I think that's what was going on. So here's what happened. The events range almost over the course of a week. In Kingman, it's nearby to these nuclear tests, but there's also an Army airfield there that was built during World War II. Highly restricted. It also had three radar arrays, microwave radar arrays. Keep that in mind. On May 18th of 1953, 8 saucers are reported. Now, this story was almost forgotten until Raymond Fowler uncovered it in 1973. If you go back, there's all kinds of newspaper articles. Saucers seen, saucers crash, weird activity, fleet of saucers. The really interesting thing is reported that they're engaged in a dogfight. You rarely hear that. Rarely hear that. So that's an interesting thing there. Now, one of them makes a forced landing. Now, we think, and researchers such as Stephen Greer really believe this, that Roswell, Socorro, New Mexico, Kingman, these radar, these microwave radars were sending out pulses that interfered with the navigation systems and instrumentation of these saucers. One makes a forced landing near the Hualapai Mountains in Mojave County, just 12 miles from Kingman. May 22nd, a UFO bounces off the mountain and explodes. 2 days later, one crashes 30-foot saucer into the ground. Now, what do we know besides some newspaper reports and things like that? Well, this is what we know. There was a man named Arthur Stansel. He worked at the Nevada test site. He and others were taken from Indian Springs, which is now Creech Air Force Base, to the crash site. Okay, so why are they bringing these people here? Well, at the time, there's rumored to be something called the SOM-1-01 Special Operations Manual, Extraterrestrial Entities and Technology Recovery and Disposal. So because of 1947, which involved Hoover, which involved Eisenhower, which created the CIA, which created the Department of Defense, they had their stuff together. So they go out there and they recover this crash. And supposedly, they also recover bodies. Now, this could all be lore. This could all be bunk. But researchers have gone to what supposedly is the crash site. And folks, according to their reports, they recovered military food canisters from 1953 at that site. That's very compelling. That's compelling. Supposedly, one pilot died from these crash. Law enforcement took the other three who were alive, and they put them in a vault beneath the Mojave County Courthouse. And then they disappeared. When we look at lore all around the world, there's a very very famous case in Varhina in South America where the military comes and takes these bodies. That's most likely what happened. Over 20 military police were witness to these events. Rumor has it, one of the EBEs, the entities, went to Los Alamos. One eventually went to Area 51, and it was named J-Rod, who was probably a gray from Zeta Reticuli. Now, another man, this is the final bit, Captain Bill Uhouse. So U-H-O-U-S for those who are paying supernatural bingo at home, was a mechanical engineer who worked on reverse engineering that very craft at S4. You guys and your listeners probably know S4. That's supposedly where Bob Lazar worked. So when we look at the narrative, as I look at it as a story analyst, as a professional story analyst, there's a lot of compelling pieces here that makes it worth talking about, which makes it worth taking very seriously.
And a point of order, Zeta Reticuli, I believe, and if I'm wrong, blame me, may be the star system or group from which the aliens came that abducted Betty and Barney Hill.
That's right on.
And that would have been spotted or placed by Marjorie Fish, I believe was the lady's name, an amateur astronomer, on a famous star map.
Yes, and very uncharacteristically for Jacques Vallée, who I have a lot of respect for, maybe not for his work on aliens and cults, because he extrapolated it out too far. He called it Zeta ridiculous. That was his response to that map. But the map has merit. And a larger point of order, Roswell, Socorro, these saucers, going all the way back to what Kenneth Arnold saw, a fleet of 7 or 9 of these things, right, that kicked all of this off a couple weeks before Roswell, which people forget. They all seem to come, these grays, these very weird drone-like things in silver skull caps and silver bodysuits, seem to come from Zeta Reticuli. Yes.
Joey, we have just 4 minutes left, and we need to get all the way to the Santa Monica Pier.
Yeah. So
what would you like to tell us about Supernatural 66 in California? And that is our 8th and final state for this hour.
Yeah, and near and dear to all of our hearts because of Nicole Strickland, who you've had on your show many times, I wanted to bring up in Long Beach to Haunted Queen Mary.
All right.
Which has all of these things, the captains and the dancing and the celebrities. And, oh, man, folks, look up old episodes of Manson Mitchell with Nicole Strickland talking about Haunted Mary.
Yes, very good. Very good.
You're also welcome. Google Nicole Strickland, and you will find out that she has books on the subject that are very well regarded.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Read them all.
Yes. Sold on the Queen Mary. So, yeah, they have a lot of respect for her work.
Oh, yeah.
So you've taken us from Chicago down to California. We covered 8 states in an hour. And in a couple minutes left, what would you recommend about traveling Route 66? Does somebody need to travel it from end to end? Is it worth it just to pick out a little stretch?
Well, I think with the centennial coming up in 2 years, in November of 2026, it's worth, I think people are going to do it. They're going to go from end to end. But keep in mind that you're going to be forced into bypasses. There are places that are no longer passable. You're going to use I-40 and what some of the luminaries refer to as the slab. You're going to be on the interstate highway system. But there's so much good stuff to do. There's a lot of really great guidebooks out there. Get one of them. There's the Jack Rittenhouse one from 1946, which is wonderful. I still love it. Michael Wallace's book, Jim Hinckley's book, Joe Soderman's book. Any of those books will really help you on your way. If you want to take the whole adventure, go ahead. Otherwise, drive parts. Go to the places that light you up, that you're interested in. It's not all supernatural. Some of it is ice cream and classic cars and giant muffler men, you know.
Which is fine. It's wild. That's great, too.
It's wild. Yeah.
And I love it that a decommissioned highway is able to, on a large scale, celebrate its 100th anniversary.
100?
Yeah. 100. Yep. It's the centennial.
In 2 years.
Yeah. 1926, it was founded. And I think this is going to be a rebirth for it. I really do.
It sounded like there are parts of it that are no longer exist. If you have to get on the interstate or do something else, like the road just crumbled and they didn't replace it?
Yeah, because, I mean, once Eisenhower committed to the interstate highway system in the mid-1950s, there just wasn't money. Like, we all know, a friend of mine in West Virginia, I won't say which town, just blew out her tire. Like, the roads. Okay. Yeah, maintenance. Okay. Yeah.
Joey Medea, what a lot of fun today to talk about something a little different. I liked it. And thank you for doing the research on it.
Diligently, you're welcome. Diligently, as always. Thank you, Joey Medea. It's always a pleasure to have you on Manson Mitchell. We consider you a friend we have yet to meet face-to-face. That will happen, my friend. You and Tanya.
Take care, my friends. Thanks for bearing with my voice today.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for tuning in to Manson Mitchell. We hope you're enjoying your weekend, and we hope you have a great week ahead.
Here's what's coming up next week on Manson Mitchell.
I'm Gary Mance.
I'm Suzanne Mitchell.
We're a couple of baby boomers who bring you a talk radio mix of metaphysics and music, politics, and pop culture.
And you never know which celebrity will join us for an interesting conversation.
Mance and Mitchell is Boomer HQ, Friday and Saturday mornings at 10 on 1150 AM KKNW.
Your home for alternative talk in Seattle and Western Washington.